Hello Year 4, it's Mr. Marriott here. I hope you're all well and I hope your home learning's going really well. I have been amazed by the pictures and messages we've been getting on the VLE. Amazing Viking longships. If you haven't quite made yours yet, don't worry. Keep going, but I'm so proud of everyone that's made them. Such a variety. Lego ones, clay ones, Play-Doh ones, cardboard ones. Absolutely amazing. So well done to everybody. And well done for all your VE Day work as well. Again, some amazing responses and news articles. So well done, guys. Now, I'm going to read you chapter 3 of The Butterfly Lion shortly. But before I do that, what I thought would be good is if I ask you some questions about chapter 2. And once I've finished asking you the questions, you might want to pause this recording and go and listen to chapter 2 again and think of some of the answers to the questions and then come back to chapter 3. So here are the questions about chapter 2. What do you think the phrase "all bark and no bite" means when the old woman describes the dog? Have a little think about that one. Do you think the butterfly lion that the little boy sees on the hill is alive? Is it real? And why do you think your answer? What do you think about your answer? Is it yes or no? And can you give a reason for it? Who is Bertie? And why do you think the old woman wants to talk about him so much? And the final question is, when the old woman starts telling her story about Bertie, why do you think she starts it so slowly? And why do you think she gazes into the distance while she's telling it? So some tricky questions there. And you might want to discuss those with an adult at home when they're free. And a lot of those questions are a bit like our comprehension questions we look at in school. So sometimes the answer isn't actually right there in the text. You have to use your imagination and your brain and what we call inference. You have to take some of the ideas that you've listened to in the text and go, right, I'm going to come up with my own idea and own opinion based on what I've heard. So if you want to go and answer those questions, I would pause this recording now and then go and listen to chapter 2, because I'm about to begin chapter 3 of The Butterfly Lion. Chapter 3, Timbavati. Bertie was born in South Africa in a remote farmhouse near a place called Timbavati. It was shortly after Bertie first started to walk that his mother and father decided a fence must be put around the farmhouse to make a compound where Bertie could play in safety. It wouldn't keep the snakes out, nothing could do that, but at least Bertie would be safe now from the leopards and the lions and the spotted hyenas. Enclosed within the compound were the lawn and gardens at the front of the house and the stables and barns at the back. All the room a child would need or want, you might think, but not Bertie. The farm stretched as far as the eye could see in all directions, 20,000 acres of veld. Bertie's father farmed cattle, but times were hard. The rains had failed too often, and many of the rivers and waterholes had all but dried up. With fewer wildebeest and impala to prey on, the lions and leopards would sneak up on the cattle whenever they could. So Bertie's father was more often than not away from home with his men guarding the cattle. Every time he left, he'd say the same thing. "Don't you ever open that gate, Bertie. You hear me? There's lions out there, leopards, elephants, hyenas. You stay put, you hear?" Bertie would stand at the fence and watch him ride out, and he would be left behind with his mother, who was also his teacher. There were no schools for 100 miles, and his mother too was always warning him to stay inside the fence. "Look what happened in Peter and the Wolf," she would say. His mother was often sick with malaria, and even when she wasn't sick, she would be listless and sad. There were good days, days when she would play the piano for him and play hide and seek around the compound, or he'd sit on her lap, on the sofa, out on the veranda, and she'd just talk and talk, all about her home in England, about how much she hated the wilderness and the loneliness of Africa, and about how Bertie was everything to her. But they were rare days. Every morning he'd climb into her bed and snuggle up to her, hoping against hope that today she'd be well and happy, but so often she wasn't, and Bertie would be left on his own again, to his own devices. There was a water hole downhill from the farmhouse and some distance away. That water hole, when there was water in it, became Bertie's whole world. He would spend hours in the dusty compound, his hands gripping the fence, looking out at the wonders of the veld, at the giraffes drinking, spread-legged at the waterhole, at the browsing impala, tails twitching alert, at the warthog snorting and snuffling under the shade of the shingai trees, at the baboons, the zebras, the wildebeests, and the elephants bathing in the mud. But the moment Bertie always longed for was when a pride of lions came padding out of the veld. The impala were the first to spring away. Then the zebra would panic and gallop off. Within seconds, the lions would have the waterhole to themselves and they would crouch to drink. From the safe haven of the compound, Bertie looked and learned as he grew up. By now, he could climb the tree by the farmhouse and sit high in its branches. He could see better from up there. He would wait for his lions for hours on end. He got to know the life of the waterhole so well that he could feel the lions were out there even before he saw them. Bertie had no friends to play with, but he always said he was never lonely as a child. At night, he loved reading his books and losing himself in the stories, and by day, his heart was out in the veld with the animals. That was where he yearned to be. Whenever his mother was well enough, he would beg her to take him outside the compound, but her answer was always the same. "I can't, Bertie. Your father has forbidden it," she'd say. And that was that. The men would come home with their stories of the veld, of the family of cheetahs sitting like sentinels, of the leopard they had spotted high in his tree, watching over his kill, of the hyenas they had driven off, of the herd of elephants which had stampeded the cattle. And Bertie would listen, wide-eyed agog. Again and again, he asked his father if he could go out with him to help guard the cattle. His father just laughed, patted his head, and said it was man's work. He did teach Bertie how to ride and how to shoot too, but always within the confines of the compound. Week in, week out, Bertie had to stay behind the fence. He made up his mind, though, that if no one would take him out into the veld, then one day he would go by himself. But something always held him back. Perhaps it was one of those tales he'd been told of the black mamba snakes whose bite would kill you within 10 minutes. Of hyenas whose jaws would crunch you to bits. Of vultures who would finish you off. Anything was left so that no one would ever find you. For the time being, he stayed behind the fence. But the more he grew up, the more his compound became a prison to him. One evening, Bertie must have been about 6 years old by now. He was sitting high up in the branches of his tree, hoping against hope the lions might come down for their sunset drink, as they often did. He was thinking of giving up, for it would soon be dark, far too dark to see. Then he saw a solitary lioness come down to the waterhole. Then he saw that she was not alone. Behind her, On unsteady legs came what looked like a lion cub. But it was white, glowing white in the gathering gloom of dusk. While the lioness drank, the cub played at catching her tail, and then when she had her fill, the two of them slipped away into the long grass and were gone. Bertie ran inside screaming with excitement. He had to tell someone, anyone. He found his father working at his desk. "Impossible," said his father. "You're seeing things that aren't there, or you're telling fibs. One of the two." "I saw him, I promise," Bertie insisted. But his father would have none of it and sent him to his room for arguing. His mother came to see him later. "Anyone can make a mistake, Bertie dear," she said. "It must have been the sunset. It plays trick with your eyes sometimes. There's no such thing as a white lion." The next evening, Bertie watched again at the fence, but the white lion cub and the lioness did not come, nor did they the next evening, nor the next. Bertie began to think he must have been dreaming it. A week or more passed, and there had been only a few zebras and wildebeest down at the waterhole. Bertie was already upstairs in his bed when he heard his father riding into the compound and then the stamp of his heavy boots on the veranda. "We got her, we got her," he was saying. "Huge lioness, massive she was. She's taken half a dozen of my best cattle in the last 2 weeks. Well, she won't be taking any more." Bertie's heart stopped. In that one terrible moment, he knew which lioness his father was talking about. There could be no doubt about it. His white lion cub had been orphaned. "But what if," Bertie's mother was saying, "what if she had young ones to feed? Perhaps they were starving." "So would we be if we let it go on. We had to shoot her," his father retorted. Bertie lay there all night, listening to the plaintive roaring echoing through the veld as if every lion in Africa was sounding a lament. He turned his face into his pillow and could think of nothing but the orphaned white cub, and he promised himself there and then that if ever the cub came down to the waterhole looking for his mother, then he would do what he had never dared to do. He would open the gate and go out and bring him home. He would not let him die out there all alone, but no lion cub came to his waterhole. All day, every day, he waited for him to come, but he never came. So that was chapter 3 of The Butterfly Lion. Now, this time I'm also going to put some questions on about chapter 3. So my first question is quite a sad chapter in some ways, but do you think Bertie's father was right to do what he did? Why do you think Bertie's father did what he did? Little question about a word here. What do you think the veld is? I wonder if you could look up that word. Another thing you could do is, could you draw the farm from the description and then outside the farm, outside the fence, beyond the fence, the waterhole? What do you think a waterhole is? At the beginning of the chapter, it said times were hard. What do you think that means? And that may help you actually answer the question I first asked about Bertie's father and how you feel about what he did. Bertie's mum talks about a story called Peter and the Wolf. Do you know this story? And if you don't, could you find out what this story is and why do you think Bertie's mum talks about it? Okay, year four, I hope you enjoy chapter 3. I will be recording chapter 4 in the next couple of days and hopefully that will be on our school website. Keep safe and keep well, and I look forward to reading you chapter 4 of The Butterfly Lion.